Kamalaspadamudapa Rama Samu Ramada Pati Ganesha Chita Pado Rama Sambu Ramada Pati Ganesha Chirata Pado Jagannatha Swami Nayana Patagami Bhavatu Me 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 Pujay Sabe Venum Shri Rasi Sikhi Piksham Katitate Pujay Sabe Venum Shri Rasi Sikhi Piksham Katitate Dukalame Tante Sahacharikata Samvididate Dukalam netante sahacharika taksham vididate Sadashi madrinda vana basakti lila parichayo Jagannatha Swami Nayana Patagami Bhavatu Me Jagannatha Swami Pati Milita Bhudeva Patalai Stuti Pradurbhavan Prati Vadanu Pakanya Sadaya Stuti Pradurbhavan Prati Vatamu Pakanya Sadaya Jaya Sindur Bandhu Sakala Jagatam Sindhu Sutaya Jaya Sindhu Bandha Sakala Jagatam Sindhu Sutaya Jagannatha Swami Nayana Patagami Bhavatu Me Jagannatha Swami Nayana Patagami Bhavatu Me Jagannatha Swami Nayana Patagami Bhavatu Me Jagannatha Param Brahma Pida Kuvala Dalokula Nayano Param Brahma Pida Kuvala Yadalokula Nayano Nibhasimi Ladro Nihita Charano Nanta Shirasi Vasi Niladro Nihita Charano Nanta Shirasi Vasa Nandi Radhasa Rasa Babura Lingana Sugo Vasa Nandi Radhasa Rasa Babura Lingana Sugo Jagannatha Swami Nayana Patagami Bhavatu Me Jagannatha Swami Nayana Patagami Bhavatu Me Jagannatha Swami Nayana Patagami Bhavatu Me Jagannatha Swami Nayana Patagami Bhavatu Me. Jagannath Swami Nayana Patagami Baba Tume. Jagannath Swami Nayana Patagami Baba Tume.
Some of the Sanskrit's missing here. I'll read these verses in English. Yeah, I know, it's okay. This is Jagannathastakam by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Lord Jagannath sometimes makes the melodious sounds of playing music and singing throughout the groves on the banks of the Kalindi River. He is like a bumblebee experiencing great delight while tasting the nectar of the lotus-like faces of the cowherd damsels. His lotus feet are worshipped by great personalities such as Lakshmi, Shiva, Brahma, Indra, and Ganesh. May that Lord of the universe kindly become visible unto me. In his left hand he holds a flute. Upon his head is a peacock feather, and around his lips is a fine silken cloth. From the corners of his eyes he casts sidelong glances upon his loving companions. He is most fond of the pastimes he conducts while living in Sri Vrindavan. May that Lord of the universe kindly become visible unto me. On the shore of the great ocean is a large palace that glows with the effulgence of solid gold and is topped by the towering temple spire that appears to be a blue sapphire mountain. Residing therein, along with his mighty brother Balabhadra, and in between them his sister Subhadra, Lord Jagannath bestows opportunities for all godly souls to render various devotional services. May the Lord of the universe kindly become visible unto me. He is a fathomless ocean of causeless mercy, and his beautiful complexion is like a cluster of blackish rain clouds. He derives great pleasure by hearing the words of affectionate chastisement from his beloved goddess Lakshmi. His face is like a fully blown spotless lotus flower. He is worshipped by the best of demigods and sages, and his character and activities are glorified in song by the topmost personified Upanishads. May that Lord of the universe kindly become visible unto me. As the Lord mounts his Rathyatra cart and parades along the road, there is constant accompaniment of loud prayers and songs chanted by large assemblies of saintly Brahmins. Hearing their hymns, Lord Jagannath is favorably disposed toward them. He is an ocean of mercy and is the true friend of all the worlds. May that Lord of the universe, along with his consort Lakshmi, who is born from the ocean of nectar, kindly become visible unto me. He is the ornament adorning the head of Param Brahma, the supreme spiritual reality. His eyes are like the blossomed petals of a lotus flower, and he resides in the Nilachala temple that resembles a sapphire hill. His lotus feet are placed upon the heads of Lord Anantadev. He is overwhelmed by the flow of transcendental loving mellows, and he becomes happy only by embracing the luscious divine form of Srimati Radharani. May that Lord of the universe kindly become visible unto me. I certainly do not pray for a kingdom, nor for gold, rubies, and wealth. I do not ask for an excellent and beautiful wife, which is a possession desired by all ordinary men. I simply pray that that Lord of the universe, whose glories are sung by Lord Shiva from age to age, kindly be visible unto me. O Lord of the demigods, please quickly take away this useless material existence that I am undergoing. O Lord of the Yadus, please destroy the boundless accumulation of my sinful reactions. Aho. It is certainly that Lord Jagannath. It is certain that Lord Jagannath bestows his lotus feet upon those who themselves feel humbled and helpless. May that Lord of the universe kindly become visible unto me. The soul of that restrained. Do you have the English there? The soul of that self. That's an extra. Self-retrained and virtuous person who recites these eight verses glorifying, you're supposed to be restrained, I think. The soul of that self-restrained and virtuous person who recites these eight verses glorifying Lord Jagannath becomes cleansed of all sins and duly proceeds to Lord Vishnu's abode. Very good. So we're reading from the Śrīla Prabhupāda Līlāmṛta. His Holiness Swatsrūpa Das Goswami. Maybe since this is the last class I'll be giving before the Rath Yatra Festival, talk a little about Prabhupada's feeling about Rath Yatra. I spoke a little bit about this yesterday in the class. Actually, I can talk about this during the class time. Anyway, we'll read a little bit first. This is still in the Stay High Forever chapter, walking back home. In the early evening, past the shops and crowded tenements, followed by more than a dozen interested new people from the park, the Swami again sustained occasional shouts and taunts. But those who followed him from the park were still feeling the aura of an ecstasy that easily tolerated a few taunts from the street. Prabhupada especially was undisturbed. As he walked with his head high, not speaking, he was gravely absorbed in his thoughts, and yet his eyes actively noticed people and places and exchanged glances. With those whom he passed on his way. On his way along 7th Street, he passed churches and funeral homes, across 1st Avenue to the noisy, heavily trafficked 2nd Avenue, and then down to 2nd, past liquor stores, coin laundries, delicatessens, past the Iglesia Alianza Cristiana Misionera, the Kohinoor Intercontinental Restaurant and Palace. Then past the Church of Nativity, and finally back home to number 26. There was a crowd of people from the park standing on the sidewalk outside the storefront, young people waiting for him to arrive and unlock the door to matchless gifts. They wanted to know more about the dance and the chant and the elderly Swami and his disciples who had created such a beautiful scene in the park. They filled the storefront. Outside on the sidewalk, the timid or uncommitted loitered near the door or window, smoking and waiting or peering in and trying to see the paintings on the wall. Swamiji entered and walked directly to his dais and sat down before the largest gathering that had ever graced his temple. He spoke further of Krishna consciousness, the words coming as naturally as breathing, as he quoted the Sanskrit authority behind what they had all been experiencing in the park. Just as they had all chanted today, he said, so everyone should chant always. A long-haired girl sitting close to Swamiji raised her hand and asked, seemingly in trance, when I am chanting, I feel great concentration of energy on my forehead, and then a buzzing comes and a reddish light. Just keep on chanting, Swamiji replied. It will clear up. Well, what does the chanting produce? She seemed to be coming out of her trance now. Chanting produces chanting, he replied, just as when you are calling the name of your beloved. If there is someone you love very much, then you want to repeat his name again and again. It is out of love. A man spoke up without raising his hand. But isn't it just kind of hypnotism on sound, like I chanted Coca-Cola over and over? Wouldn't it be the same? No, Prabhupada replied. You take any word, repeat it for 10 minutes, and you will feel disgusted. But we chant 24 hours, and we don't feel tired. Oh, we feel new energy. The question seemed more relevant today. The guests had all been chanting in the park, and now they were probing philosophically into what they had experienced. The Swami's followers marked this as a victory, and they felt some responsibility as hosts and guides for others. Swamiji had asked Kirtanananda to prepare prasadam for the guests, and soon Kirtanananda appeared with small paper cups of sweet rice for everyone. The chanting process is just to cleanse the mind, said Prabhupada. We have so many misunderstandings about ourselves, about the world, about God, and about the relationships between these things. We have so many misgivings. This chanting will help to cleanse the mind. Then you will understand that this chanting is not different from Krishna. A boy who was accompanying the long-haired girl spoke out incoherently. Yes, no, I, Prabhupada. Yes, yes, yes. In the beginning, we have to chant. We may be in whatever position we are, it doesn't matter. If you begin chanting, the first benefit will be Cheto Darpana Marjana. The mind will be clear of all dirty things, and the next stage will be that the sufferings, the miseries of this material world will subside. Boy, well, I don't quite understand what the material world is because, Prabhupada, the material world is full of sufferings and miseries. Don't you understand that? Are you happy? Boy, sometimes I'm happy, sometimes I'm not. Prabhupada, no, you are not happy. That sometimes is your imagination. Just like a diseased man says, oh yes, I am well. What is that well? He's going to die. And he is well? Boy, I don't claim any ultimate happiness. Prabhupada, no, you do not know what happiness is. Boy, but it's greater or lesser. Prabhupada, yes, you do not know what is happiness. An older man standing with his arms folded near the rear of the temple. Well, of course, that sorrow or that suffering might add the spice to make the suffering that goes in between seem happiness. Prabhupada, no. The thing is that there are different kinds of miseries that we all understand. It is only due to our ignorance that we don't care for it. Just like a man who is suffering for a long time, he has forgotten what is real happiness. Similarly, the sufferings are there already. For example, and he directed himself to the young man with his girlfriend. Take, for example, that you are a young man. Now, would you like to become an old man? Boy, I will become an old man in the process of Prabhupada. You will become means you will be forced to become an old man. But you don't like to become an old man. Boy, I am not going to be forced to become an old man. Prabhupada. Yes, yes, forced. You will be forced. Boy, I don't see why. Prabhupada, if you don't want to become an old man, you will be forced to become an old man. Boy, it's one of the conditions of Prabhupada. Yes, that condition is miserable. Boy, I find it not miserable, Prabhupada, because you are a young man. But ask any old man how he is suffering. You see, a diseased man. Do you want to be diseased? Boy, I wouldn't search it out, Prabhupada. Boy, I wouldn't search it out. Prabhupada, no, no, just answer me. Do you like to be diseased? Boy, what is disease? Prabhupada, just answer. Boy, what is disease? Prabhupada, oh, you have never suffered from disease? You have never suffered from disease? Prabhupada looks dramatically incredulous. Boy, I have had the mumps and the measles and whooping cough, which is what everyone has, and you get over it. Some people in the audience laugh. Prabhupada, everyone may be suffering, but that does not mean that it is not suffering. We have to admit that we are always in suffering. Boy, if I have never known happiness, I feel sure I have never known suffering either. Prabhupada, that is due to your ignorance. We are suffering. We don't want to die, but death is there. We don't want to be diseased, but disease is there. We don't want to become old. Old age is there. We don't want so many things, but they are forced upon us. And any sane man will admit that these are sufferings. But if you are accustomed to take these sufferings, then you say it is all right. But any sane man won't like to be diseased. He won't like to be old, and he won't like to die. Why do you have this peace movement? Because if there is war, there will be death. So people are afraid. They are making agitation. There should be no war. Do you think that death is a very pleasurable thing? Boy, I have never experienced. Prabhupada, you have experienced and forgotten. Many times you have died. You have experienced, but you have forgotten. Forgetfulness is no excuse. Suppose a child forgot something. That does not mean he did not suffer. Boy, no, I agree. Prabhupada, yes. So suffering is there. We have to take direction from realized souls, from authorities. Just like in Bhagavad Gita, it is said, Dukkalayam Ashashvatam. The world is full of miseries. No one has to realize it. Unless we understand that this place is miserable, there's no question of how to get out of it. A person who doesn't develop this understanding is not fully developed. Just like the animals, they do not understand what misery is. They are satisfied. And last paragraph. When he returned to his apartment, one of the boys brought him a cup of hot milk, and someone remarked that they should do the chanting in the park every week. Every day, he replied. Even while half a dozen people were present, he lay down on his thin mat. He continued to speak for some minutes, and then his voice trailed off, preaching in fragmented words. He appeared to doze. It was 10 o'clock. They tiptoed out, softly shutting the door. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskritam Naram Chaivam Narottamam Devim Saraswatim Vyasam Nato Jayamudirayat Nasta Prayeshu Apadresham Iskandala Sevaya Bhagavati Uttamashloke Bhakti Bhavati Naishtiki Mukam Karodi Vachalam Pangum Vangayate Girim Kripa Tarham Bande Paramanana Maravam. From Srimad Bhagavatam. I thought today too I would spend most of the class time talking about Ratha Yatra, what I know about, and Prabhupada's desire to have Ratha Yatra celebrated in different parts of the world. So we'll just read this and comment briefly on it and go into Ratha Yatra. So reading from the third canto, 7th chapter, 31st verse, Srimad Bhagavatam, translations and purports by divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. Pashanda Pata Vashamyam Pratiloma Iveshanam Ivasya Katayo Yash Cha Yavatir Guna Karmajaha Pashanda Pata Vaishamyam Pashanda Pata Vaishamyam Pratilomani Vaishanam Pratilomani Vaishanam Jivasya Gatayo Yascha Jivasya Gatayo Yascha Yavatir Guna Karmaja Yavatir Guna Karmaja Pashanda Pata Vaishamyam Pratilo Mani Vaishanam Jivasya Gatayo Yascha Yavatir Guna Karma Jaha Pashanda Pata Vaishamyam Pratilo Mani Vaishanam Jivasya Gatayo Yascha Yavatir Guna Karma Jaha Pratilomani Vaishanam Jivasya Gatayo Yascha Gunakarmadaha Pratilomani Vaishanam Jivasya Gatayo Yascha Yavatir Guna Karma Jaha. Pashanda Pata Vashamyam Pratilo Mani Vaishanam Jivasya Gatayo Yascha Yavatir Guna Karma Jaha. Vashanda Patavaishamyam Patilomani Vaishanam Jivasya Gatayo Yascha Yavati Guna Karmaja. Ladies. Pashanda Patavaishamyam Patilomani Vaishanam Jivasya Gatayo Yascha Yavati Guna Karmajaha Pashanda Patavaishamyam Pratilomani Vaishanam
jivasya gatayo yascha yavati guna karma jaha pashanda patavaishamyam deshanam jivasya gatayo yascha yavati guna karma jaha. Pashanda patavaishamyam patilohani deshanam jivasya gatayo yascha yagriga karmajaha. Pashanda pata,
the path of the faithless.
Vaishamyam,
imperfection by contradiction.
Pratiloma,
crossbreeding.
Niveshanam,
jivasya,
Niveshanam,
situation.
Jivasya,
of the living entities.
Katayaha,
movements.
Yaha,
as they are.
Cha,
also.
Yavatihi,
as many as.
Guna,
modes of material nature.
Karma jaha,
generated by different work.
Prabhupada's translation.
Please also describe the imperfections and contradictions of the faithless atheists, the situation of crossbreeding, and the movements of the living entities in various species of life according to their particular modes of nature and work. Please also describe the imperfections and contradictions of the faithless atheists, the situation of crossbreeding, and the movements of the living entities in various species of life according to their particular modes of nature and work. Prabhupada's purport. The combination of living entities in different modes of material nature is called crossbreeding. The faithless atheists do not believe in the existence of God, and thus their paths of philosophy are contradictory. Atheist philosophies never agree with one another. Different species of life are evidence of various varieties of mixtures of the modes of material nature. Sri Chaitanya Manovistam Stapitam Jaina Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dharati Stapitam Sitam. It's proper, as Vidura is showing us, to make all kinds of inquiries before the superior, the spiritual master, the Muni, the saintly persons. He's asking many detailed questions about things like crossbreeding and the faithless atheists. Even though it's understood that faithless atheists are of a different mentality, he wants more detailed knowledge about how this actually works. Prabhupada comments that the paths of philosophy are contradictory, and that's true in all traditions, in Western traditions and Eastern traditions. All the various philosophers, Patanjali, Gotama, Kanada, the great philosophers, considered the great philosophers of India, Patanjali, Kapila, and of course Narayani, or Badri Narayan, or Badarayani, or Shukadeva Goswami. Their philosophies appear to be, and are in many senses, contradictory. Prabhupada cites the example of Charvaka, who is also one of the philosophers. He's sometimes considered like the eighth philosopher. And his idea, his philosophy is atheism, basically, that you just enjoy life to the fullest extent because at the end you have to die and there's nothing more. These philosophers are all very much contradictory. And so it is stated in the Mahabharata that Mahajayena Katasapanta, the beginning of that verse, explains how the Munis do have to produce philosophies which are contradictory. They have to produce new philosophies. And all of our Western philosophy is the history of contradiction. There's one paradigm or one basic philosophy, and then another philosopher comes along and supposedly has a superior philosophy which contradicts the previous one, and it continues up to the present moment. There are philosophers, existentialists, and they contradict also one another. Prabhupada at one point he gave the example, didn't he, of circles. If Krishna is the center, then even though we may have differences, because Krishna is the center, our differences are like circles that are concentric. And if they're not concentric, that is, if Krishna is not the center, they will conflict with one another. I think he gave the example of rocks thrown into a pond of water. If the rocks all go to the very same place, the waves are concentric. They just ripple out from the same source. And if the rocks are thrown in different places, the circles conflict with one another. I think we studied this in physics. We had to study wave patterns, how the conflicting patterns look. I think, isn't it in the Olympic logo that there's a bunch of circles that kind of, like chains, they interact with each other? This is kind of interesting symbology. The different countries are very heavily nationalistic. Sometimes they're dying for their country. They're ready to go to war. And that's kind of what the Olympics is, isn't it? It's the veiled nationalism. The French are fighting with the New Zealanders are fighting with the Indians are fighting with the English. And they're all conflicting. But because it's all in an arena, it's considered to be okay. And then you have these kind of symbols that are really in conflict, like a chain. That's kind of like the modern-day version of the United Nations. Prabhupada called it a fighting settlement arena, but the fighting still continues. It's like the Colosseum, you know, there's always some fighting going on. So that's what he called the United Nations. Therefore, without God in the center, atheism becomes the rule, and then we have continuous conflict. Because the root, the goal is wrong, everything else becomes wrong and conflicting. There was a fellow about 10 years ago who wrote about the nature of scientific resolution. His name was Thomas Kuhn. And his idea, his thesis was that there's a great shift in the scientific paradigm every 10 or 20 years. Especially this has been taking place in the last century and up to the present moment. Everything changes. So these people are considered to be the most intelligent in modern times, the scientists. They're considered more than the philosophers. Of course, Prabhupada said that philosophy is the science of sciences. However, hard science, as it is sometimes called, is considered to be the resting place, the ultimate edifice of intelligent people these days. Pardon? Modern thinkers, modern people, the modern society, they revere scientists as having solutions to all humankind's problems in general. That's the notion. And according to more critical analysis, these scientific theories, especially when it comes down to the origin of life and metaphysical details, they tend to conflict with each other. Although there are some who are groping towards spiritual reality in an impersonalistic way in quantum physics and so on. Anyway, I don't know too much about that, so I'm not going to delve into it. But there is definitely contradictory philosophy. Atheistic philosophers never agree with one another, as Prabhupada is saying. We don't have a lot of time, so I won't spend a lot of time on this verse, but I'd like to talk about Rakhyatra, if it's permissible, because we're getting close to that time. And I was very happy to go down to the radio studio yesterday and make the announcements with Rasa Parayana. It's the first time he said it. English speaking on his program, I think. Anyway, announced it about the time and the place and what the route would be and what we would do. So I'd like to talk a little about how Rathiyatra started in the diaspora. I guess that's what they call outside of India, if you're an Indian. Of course, we've heard and we've seen in the film, we've read about how Prabhupada was very attached to Rathiyatra from his early childhood. And he wanted a Rathiyatra festival, and he had a little wagon, a little cart that was fashioned into a Rathiyatra cart when he was quite young, 5 or 6 years old. All the people in the neighborhood gathered around, and he was very happy. This is an indication that Prabhupada was Nityasiddha, that he had recollection of this in previous existences. So one point, it was in San Francisco, Prabhupada called me into his room, and he had been drawing something on a piece of paper. He had been observing out his window flatbed trucks rolling by, and somehow he decided that our first Rathayatra should happen in the city. He called it Jagannath Puri. We had Jagannath deities there. You know the story about how a little Jagannath deity about 3 inches high was procured from the local import shop by Malati. Anyway, large Jagannath deities were fashioned by her husband Shyamasundar, and they became part of the temple, which he called New Jagannath Puri. So in that mood of meditation, he made a drawing of a Rathayatra cart. So he called me into his room and he showed me this drawing. It had 4 pillars on the back of a flatbed truck. He showed the flatbed truck. He drew a truck. You know, flatbed truck. It was about maybe, 10 meters long on the flatbed. And rising perpendicular from it were these 4 pillars, circular pillars, about maybe, 6 or 7 or 8 centimeters in diameter. And they stood about maybe 1 meter, 2 meters high. And there was cloth that went up to a pitched point, kind of a roof, so it was pointed like a mandap with a little flag on top. So he drew this. This is what was in the drawing. And next to each part of the drawing, he had a number. Each pillar had a number. The cloth that was going up to the top had numbers, number 2, number 3, and then there was the flag on top. That was number 4. There was the truck itself. That was number 5, and the bed of the truck was number 6. He had drawn this thing. I wish I had kept it. It was a fantastic drawing. And then it was on lined papers, I remember. He had a little legend down at the bottom, what number 1 means, what number 2 means. And he had written out, this is the pillar, this is it. And then number 6 or number 7, he showed what the deities would be like, where they would be situated. One of the deities, I think it was Lord Jagannath, was facing out towards the back end of the truck. And then on the two sides, facing the two sides, were Subhadra and Balaram. They would be strapped to a kind of backrest. In the drawing, he had a thing somehow that stuck up from the bed of the flatbed truck, and the deities would be lashed onto these around the waist. And that was all part of the drawing. He said, this should be the first Rathayatra. So I didn't know anything about carpentry. I asked Shyamasundar to come in, and he looked at it also. And then he was explaining to Prabhupada how these pillars and the backrest for the deities would be affixed to the flatbed truck. And then he called another fellow named Bob Simmons was his name, who was also a carpenter. And so the two of them figured out how they would make this first Rathayatra. So they actually started constructing it on a truck. And there was a truck that belonged to the neighboring people that were called the Diggers. And we also rented a truck from Hertz. So we had 2 trucks. And I've seen photographs of it. I can't recall which one was the one that had the deities on it, but one of them had it. And then on the other truck, the devotees all assembled, and there was a big kirtan. Now on the truck that had the Rathayatra, we had a speaker system, 2 very large speakers. They were about a meter high and that wide. And in order to power them, one would have to have batteries, because we had a microphone, and there was chanting on the back all the time accompanying the parade. In order to power those speakers, we would have to have a large group of batteries, the kind that you put in an automobile, maybe 6 or 7. So we really couldn't get those kind of batteries. They were very expensive to buy new, very, very expensive, and we couldn't rent them. So we decided to get a little motor. It was about this big. And that motor was called a Tiny Tiger, partly because it was yellow. So we thought we would just purchase such a thing. So we went to the shop and purchased it. We thought it might be a good idea to test it in there, but then we thought it would make a lot of smoke, and they probably wouldn't let us test it. You put gasoline in there, and it powered this big amplifier, which powered the speakers. So we got back to the temple, and we hooked up the Tiny Tiger, and it was definitely, deafeningly loud. It was just so loud that it was almost intolerable. And it emitted a lot of smoke. It was carbon monoxide that came out. It was just billowing out of this thing. But we had already bought it, and so we were stuck with it. The problem was that on the back of that flatbed truck, if you put the tiny tiger there, the noise would be so loud that it would drown out the speakers. It was just really loud. It was like standing next to an airplane. It was that loud. So we had to figure out a way to do it. And the only thing we could figure out how to do was to put it inside the cabin of the truck, which Shyam Sundar was driving. I was chanting in the back with the microphone. But he was coming very close to getting asphyxiated by this carbon monoxide. Sometimes people kill themselves in cars. They run a hose from the exhaust pipe into the car, and they suffocate, and they commit suicide like that. So it was actually very dangerous, even though the windows were down. When the windows were down, the noise would come out, and it would drown out the sound on the amplifier, on the speakers. So it was a very difficult Rath Yatra for the driver. So I was chanting in the back, and he asked me to come in, and he said he couldn't handle it anymore. He'd have to roll the windows down every so often, and it would drown out the chanting, and then he'd have to roll it back up. So I went into the torture chamber there with him a few times. And so we would try to keep the windows up until we were practically dead, and he was trying to drive his truck, and he'd roll the windows down. Smoke would come billowing out, the sound would drown out the Rath Yatra, and then we would roll them back up. So this was going on for about 5 miles from the start of the Rath Yatra parade down to the beach. We went alongside the park. And at one point, there was a slight hill we had to go up. And somehow the engine died or didn't get it into gear right. I was sitting in the cabin, and it started to roll backwards about maybe 2 or 3 meters. It rolled backwards. And we were both deathly afraid that we had run somebody over because it just happened so suddenly, without notice. But fortunately, nobody was hurt, even. And that made us remember something we'd read about the Rath Yatra chariot, that in Puri, there's a tendency for it to go backwards. It happens somehow at every Rath Yatra. So we were thinking, this is really the authentic Rath Yatra, that the car's rolling backward, just like it does in Puri. Of course, we didn't have Lord Chaitanya there to put his head to it and drive it forward. Then the flatbed finally reached the beach. And by that time, I had been up all night. I was very exhausted and just went back to my apartment and fell asleep for hours and hours. But what happened was that the devotees were so eager to see Prabhupada, who was in the area. He wasn't in San Francisco. He was in Stinson Beach, which was in Marin County. And you had to go over the Golden Gate Bridge to get there. About 10 devotees piled onto the back of this flatbed truck. And in that month, in August in San Francisco, it gets very cold. It's overcast somehow because of the topography. It's kind of warm and sunny the rest of the time, but in July and August, it's overcast and gets very cold. So they got onto that flatbed about 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock at night when it was very cold, and they went over the Golden Gate Bridge into Marin County, and they had to go over a very windy road over a big mountain and come down into Stinson Beach. And these were what they call hairpin curves. They were really curvy. So I don't know how they managed to stay on board that thing, because there weren't any handles or any sides to it. It was just a flatbed truck. So they went all the way down to Stinson Beach and saw, just to see Prabhupada. And he was, I think, they brought the Jagannath deity with them and set it up in his room. He was very, very pleased, and they told him all about the first Rath Yatra, and he was very happy. He was recuperating from the stroke he had in New York a few months earlier. He was very happy to see them. So that was the first Rath Yatra in San Francisco. Then I'll tell a little about the first one in Los Angeles. The first one in San Francisco would have been 1967. And the first one in Los Angeles was 82 or 83. I don't remember what. It was one of those years early. It was very early on, maybe 82. Anyway, there was a thought that Los Angeles wasn't a very good city to have a Rath Yatra in, because it was so spread out. There was no central place, no central part of the city they called downtown. It was all broken up into little neighborhoods. And we were out looking one day, Karandar and Jayananda and myself, for a good place to have it. We just couldn't see any place where there were very many people. We didn't have enough money in those days to advertise it, and we just figured it would just be sort of a non-event. So at the last minute, we went to Venice Beach. And Venice Beach was full of people all year around. They walked down the boardwalk along the beach. And we thought, this is the perfect place to have a Rath Yatra. So we were pushing Jayananda along in a wheelchair, because he had terminal leukemia at that time. And it was probably the last thing he was going to do. I mean, the doctors were saying he was going to die at any moment, but somehow he was just living on month after month. So we had pretty much decided that we'd have the Rath Yatra on this boardwalk. It's just wide enough for the Rath Yatra carts to go there. And just as we were getting down to the end, we pretty much made our decision. The policeman kind of stood in front of us. He was in uniform. He kind of had his hands on his hips, and we thought, oh, he's on our case about something. We're not supposed to be pushing a wheelchair on this. We didn't know what it was, but he was standing there like he was going to cause trouble. And, you know, it's just kind of formidable. You see someone in a blue uniform, and you don't know what they're in, kind of standing like this. So he said,
Thank you. think one of the